The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Outdoor Edge introduces the all-new Razor Guide Pack. Coming in at 12 ounces and in a premium wax canvas roll pack for compact storage and travel, the Razor Guide Pack is 7 blades in total, including a 5-inch replaceable blade folding knife, a 3-inch replaceable blade caping knife, and the flip and zip saw for wood or bone. Whether you're hunting the back 40 or chasing game deep in the backcountry, the Razor Guide Pack has it all. For more information, visit OutdoorEdge.com.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show, I've got two buddies, Devin McDonald and Josh Plummer. Now, both of these guys are diehard whitetail hunters, although they hunt a bunch of other things. Honestly, one of them liked to hunt with a bow more, the other with a rifle, and since they've kind of converted each other to using both pieces of equipment while hunting. Now, they also hunt hogs and coyotes and a whole number of other things. Bottom line is these guys are outdoorsmen that just like to get out there and pursue adventures outside. So I'm really excited about this episode. Let's jump in.
Like, he was doing things that were just badass.
That was one of the coolest moments of my life.
I was really scared, but knowing that Dan had the gun, I did have the rifle, like, we would be okay.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. I am joined by two outdoorsmen, two buddies who are fresh off a couple different hunts, it sounds like. Josh Plummer, Devin McDonald, how are you guys doing?
Good. Good. How are you this evening?
Yeah, we're good, man.
Good. It's been kind of a wild week around here. I left to go shed hunting down in New Mexico. Partway through, my wife called me and said, hey, how do you feel about me being gone for Florida when you get back? And I was like, oh, wait, without me? And so I came back, picked up the kids, and it's just been kind of quiet around here since I got back. But going from hiking 10 miles a day in the mountains to just kind of sitting around and shuttling the kids back and forth to school is a whole different pace.
Yeah, one's probably a lot more tiring than the other, and it's probably not shed hunting.
Exactly. Yeah, the amount of snack requests and, oh, I'm still thirsty, can we go do this? I'm like, listen, just because mom's here doesn't mean we get to do whatever we want, although we do have quite a bit of fun. So
yeah, it's how it should be.
Yeah.
Puts those 10-mile hikes in perspective. Sometimes they're not so bad when you juxtapose them to taking care of kids.
For real. Why don't you guys start out by sharing with the listeners a little bit about yourselves, maybe how you got into hunting, where you guys are at now, and then, I mean, you guys are friends and you started Reasons Hunting together, so maybe touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So I'll start off. So again, yeah, my name is Devin McDonald. I've been living in Indiana, grew up in Indiana for the most part, not too far south or from, I guess, where you're from, Dan, up in Wisconsin, yep. A couple hours away, but yeah. Grew up outside in the outdoors, playing sports. You know, Josh and I played sports together for a long time, a couple of years. You know, grew up hunting. My dad got me into hunting when I was young. It kind of, you know, him and his brothers hunted when they were kids, hunted with their dad, and kind of went on from there, and been doing it ever since. Probably like a lot of guys, took a little bit of a hiatus, you know, through the college years, a little bit time in the military. It's hard to hunt when you're not in the country. And then kind of, you know, after the military, kind of got back into it, and bow hunting for the most part is my preference, really. I've gotten far more animals through the old stick and string than I have through the rifle. But yeah, I just grew up hunting, you know, hunting birds. And I think I was, recent podcast, yeah, you guys were talking about shooting the old Daisy 88 and nailing sparrows. Yeah, I remember hitting starlings out my bedroom window, or, you know, doves off the power line or whatever, stuff you're probably not supposed to do, but ended up doing it all the time anyway. And, you know, just kind of went from there and progressed, and here we are now.
Just honing in your skills, man. If you can shoot a little dove or a starling or a cardinal or whatever, you're probably going to be a pretty lethal shot when it comes to big caliber stuff.
Yeah, it's it definitely teaches you a lot. You don't realize it when you're a kid. You're like, man, this is fun. I'm going to tag that sparrow from, you know, whatever, I don't know, 20 yards or whatever. And you don't realize. But yeah, those small shot placements really do make a big difference.
That's awesome. So when you got started in hunting, was it with a bow right away, or did you learn with a rifle and then kind of switch over?
Yeah, it was with a bow. My first hunting trip, I remember my it was kind of baptism by fire. My uncle was a 3D archery shooter and did really well with that. And so he got my dad into shooting a bow. And then, of course, you know, I grew up, you know, my first bow was like the fiberglass with a string, you know, and started shooting with that and graduated. And I think it was either my 11th or 12th birthday. I forget what it was. I was big enough and strong enough to pull the, you know, state minimum. I think it was what, 35 pounds or something like that. So my dad got me a bow for my birthday, and, you know, come October 1st, it was, you know, Friday afternoon, first weekend of bow season. I'm leaving school at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Dad's picking me up and sits me, we were hunting an apple orchard, I remember, and puts me under an apple tree and says, stay here, don't move till I come and get you. And so, yeah, that was my first hunting trip with a bow.
Dang, that's the way to do it. Josh, what about you?
Yeah, so like Devin, so I grew up in cornfields of Indiana, you know, born and raised, you know, was an outdoor kid. So I didn't really grow up in a hunting family. So, you know, a lot like Devin, I think a lot of my, what you could call hunting experience was, you know, really running around the woods with friends, you know, with a BB gun, probably, you know, shooting birds, did some fishing, you know, a little bit of coyote hunting, but that's really probably about it. You know, I kind of hit my stride later with hunting, but the seeds were sown real early with being an outdoors guy. I was in, you know, was in Boy Scouts, always camping, very involved with athletics. You know, I've known Devin since we were in seventh grade, you know, playing sports together all through high school, you know, through college, you know, and then right after college, I also went into the military as well. Didn't intend to make it a career, but, you know, fast forward 16 years and, you know, 7 deployments later, and it had all kind of taken a toll on me. I was actually in the process of getting med board for a medical retirement. And a good buddy of mine who had also been medically retired shortly before I did, it started a hunting outfit. His name is Ryan. He's actually the guy we just recently hunted with. And he hits me up. He's like, hey man, he's like, all right, you want to go hunting? There's this nonprofit called Combat Marine Outdoors. They do these hunts down in Texas. They bring in, you know, wounded warriors. He's like, it's like 4 or 5 star, you know, accommodations. They put you out there. And I'm like, you know what? You know, I hadn't thought about hunting in 16 years, but I was like, that sounds great. And I'm in. And so I signed up and ended up being a great trip. They fly down to Texas. We were at a place called the Wyo Ranch, which was a huge ranch down there. They hunt a lot of exotics, but they got everything down there as well. They pair you up with this host family who ends up being like your hunting guide and, you know, your host for the week. And there's 8 veterans total. And I got paired up with a Vietnam era veteran who was down there with his family. He sets me up. He's like, hey, here's what I got. You know, he's got it all planned out for me, just like any great guide would. He's like, have you ever hunted black buck antelope? And I'm like, I was like, aside from like Devin, like sparrows, I haven't really hunted anything. So I'm game for anything. he's like, I got this, you know, little opening. He's like, we're going to set you up 200 yards. And I'm like, 200 yards, but okay, sure. He set the bar high. And he's like, at 7 a.m. every morning, they come out. So I'm like, all right, cool. So we get out there like hour before the sun's up, 6:55, in come two big old Texas hogs. First time I'd ever seen wild hogs. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. He's like, don't worry, they're coming. And I like literally like 7:02 on the dot, like in comes this herd of black buck antelope. I'm like, holy crap, this guy was right. You know, take my time, you know, look for the right one. You know, black buck antelope are awesome. They got the cool spiral horns and everything. Pick out the right one, line him up, one shot, does a 180, drops, doesn't take a step, you know, and right there. So like 7:06 a.m., like, you know, of the very first morning of like a 3-day hunt, I'm tagged out, you know, and it was a pretty cool experience though. Cause for me, you know, like that was probably where I would say like the fire got relit with hunting. You know, I was not in a great spot really, in my life, you know, like physically, just everything had taken a toll, you know, but it was great, you know, so I came back almost kind of re-energized, you know, loving it. Immediately hit up my buddy Ryan, you know, like the next month went hog hunting with him, you know, bagged like two hogs, you know, and then from there it was just kind of on like Donkey Kong, you know, the next, you know, whitetail season kind of went into it full bore. And really ever since, you know, I've kind of have expanded their, you know, repertoire, you know, whitetail and, you know, now trying to get in turkey, hogs, you know, and really everything. So, but yeah, that's a little bit about me and kind of how I got into it.
Dang. I see a lot of organizations, and I actually get hit up by a lot of people on social media about being guests on the show with, veteran organizations, taking them out hunting. What do you think it is about hunting specifically that just becomes kind of a release or therapy or whatever it is that these men and women coming back from service are connecting well with?
Yeah. So this is something Devin and I talk about a lot. It's something he and I can both relate to. I think there's a couple aspects to it, but I think it's for us, and you use the word therapy, and I think that's probably actually the perfect word for it. You know, it's a hard life. It's a tough life, you know, and I think the biggest thing with being in the military is it gives you this deep sense of purpose that's hard to recreate anywhere else. And with hunting, it's that purpose, it's focus, it's an opportunity to do something, you know, productive, you know, almost like a constructive hobby, right? It allows you to focus, you know, of course you're never going to recreate what it was in the military, but it becomes this thing where, you know, it's almost like planning a mission, right? You know, you go out there and you execute, and it's, and there's, you know, we'll be, you know, you got to be a little honest about it. There's this part of it that kind of touches and quenches the kind of the caveman in you, you know, it hits this on this, the part of you that is a little rugged. And then I think the other big thing too, is particularly with these veterans hunts, these events, I think they're great because it's camaraderie. You know, you get together with these guys who, you know, I've been on two of these hunts now with the CMO organization. They're great. Each time I've gone, I'm hunting with guys I've never met before, but we've all served. And, you know, like the second time I went, I mean, I wasn't in the truck at the airport for 30 seconds and these guys are just bagging on me like we'd known each other for 15 years. But that's like, you know, that's like what it's like in the military. And it's that instant camaraderie, kind of sharing, you know, the hunting and kind of trading stories. And it's the same thing, you know, like just, you know, the last hunt I went on with Devin and my, you know, buddy Ryan, had my boys with me this time. And it allows you to kind of slip away and escape, I guess, to a degree, into this life that kind of, when you transition out, you kind of to a degree have to leave behind, because I think you develop some habits and some personality traits to kind of get by in the military that are not so, they're not so highly cherished by the rest of the world. You know, it's like dark sense of humor, for example, you know, you get brash. Like I say these things to Devin and some of my other military buddies that my wife just cringes about. She's like, how could you say that? But, you know, that's just the way it is. And it allows you to kind of escape for a little while. So I think that's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would definitely say, you know, to Josh's point there, you know, the camaraderie aspect of it, that's a lot of what, you know, what we're trying to do here with the company as well. But you know, when you're in the military, you make friends with people that you've known, as Josh said, for 30 seconds, and you know, you've got their back, they've got yours, you depend on each other, it's your life, you know. And you think about it, you know, you think, you know, you talk about hunting trips you've gone on with your buddies, you know, you think about what's your friendship like with your hunting partners. You know, it's different. It's yep. different. It's different than your everyday, I'm going to go watch the flag football or, you know, football on TV or whatever else buddies, but your hunting partners are different. It's just like your buddies in the military, you know, everything about everybody, and you've all got each other's back. And if we were in, you know, we're unfortunately don't live next door to each other anymore, but, you know, if it was one of those things where, if I downed a deer and Josh was around and I said, called him and said, hey man, I got this buck down in a gorge or a holler or whatever you want to call it. And he'd be there to help me in an instant, just like I'm sure any of your hunting buddies would be as well. You know, that's a real big piece of it that I think a lot of us, associate with hunting and that we get from it, that we had in the military that it's hard to find elsewhere.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, the camaraderie side of it is probably my biggest draw to hunting. Like I absolutely love even on the private properties that I've got access to. If I'm out there, I'm going to send 4 or 5 messages out. Hey, who wants to come out? Like they might not have access to it, but through me, they do. And I just love knowing that I've got a buddy out there with me, whether he's on the same 40 acres or, you know, a mile and a half away, we're both out there with the same goal. We know that as soon as we hear a gunshot or get that text like buck down, we're going to be coming over. It's like a group victory in a sense.
Yeah.
And I've found in absolutely. My life for sure, it's all of my closest friends are hunting buddies. I mean, there's guys that I play basketball with. There's guys that I do flag football tournaments with, maybe that I work out with, any number of things. But I know that if I'm in a jam, I can hit up one of those guys that I go hunting with all the time. And they're going to be there to help out no matter what.
Yeah, it's more like family than they are anything.
Yeah, they really are. And it's always fun because, you know, hunters can all relate to each other being married while you're a hunter. That's always some fun topics to hit on. And there's just something about it, man. And then, Josh, I know you mentioned even the caveman aspect of it, you know.
Hell yeah.
We've been doing this forever. Like
humans
have been doing this forever. And I find it funny when people are like, they come out and they're just so shocked at how quickly they get into it. And I'm like, it's in your DNA. Like making love, like you've been doing this. We as humans have been doing this as long as anything. And so it just makes sense that you're going to connect with it right away.
Yeah, I mean, and we'd be kidding ourselves if we didn't deny that there's just this primal nature to man. And I think there's some people that are naturally just a little more inclined to, I don't know, maybe let it creep in or just be in touch with it. But I think, you know, next to the military, I think hunters are right there, you know, and it's an interesting concept too, because, you know, we're absolutely kind of in touch with our former caveman selves. But the other thing that a lot of people I don't think realize about hunters is it's not just about the killing for us either. I mean, don't get us wrong. Like there's a part, you know, we love the hunt, the chase, but it's also a very, you know, I hate to use it, but almost, you know, very intellectually stimulating activity as well, you know, and it's a lot more complex than a lot of people understand too. I mean, hunters are, you know, conservationists, so kind of an extension of the camaraderie. I've got 15-year-old twin boys now that are now really starting to show an interest in hunting. So the camaraderie that I share is really now starting to spread to my kids. And one of the big things that I'm spreading to them is, you know, yeah, there's a primal aspect of this, you know, it's, you know, kind of coming into manhood, but it's also like, you know, there's a responsibility with this too, you know? So you talk about ethical hunting, ethical shots, you know, making sure you're making good kills. And then there's like a respect for the prey that we're hunting, right? You know, you're not just out there. Now, granted, you know, we just talked about, you know, we were shooting, you know, sparrows and stuff off the power lines and stuff when we were kids. I think everybody goes through that phase, you know, but when you start to become a, you know, a hunter, it's like, yeah, I mean, we're out there as cavemen, but we're doing it right. And we're doing it for the right reasons. You know, we want to put food on the table. We're wanting to, you know, fair chase hunting, you know, and there's a lot of respect for it. You know, it's a really kind of emotional feeling, you know, when you down, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're doing it for the 80th time or the first time, you know, when you walk up on a, you know, something you just harvested, I mean, it's an adrenaline rush, and there's this extreme feeling of gratitude, you know, where, you know, you just kind of had an arm wrestling match with Mother Nature. And of course I won because I've got a rifle, right? But, you know, real hunters have an extreme amount of respect for that situation. I think that's a really great balance with kind of the aid man aspect of it as well.
Yeah. So with this recent hunt that you guys went on, you went out for hogs. Now, for people, I mean, like you said, you had not seen a wild hog up until that hunt. They're crazy animals. You know, it's not like a white-tailed deer. It's not like, oh, you put a shot on them, they're just going to drop in their tracks. Like, they are hardy, hardy animals. And I've talked to multiple people now from Texas recently, and I'm like, dude, it's a huge problem down here, right? Oh, yeah, it's a huge problem. If you could get rid of all of them like that because they're such a problem, would you? Oh, no, absolutely not. They're way too much fun to hunt. And I get that answer from everyone. Now, I haven't talked to somebody who, like, specifically makes their living farming, because I'm sure I'd get a different answer from them. But hog hunting is taking off. Like, there's no seasons, no bag limits. You just go out and you kill hogs. You're solving a problem, and it is good meat. I talk to people all the time. Wait, you eat those things? I heard they're bad. I heard they're tough. You put anything on a smoker long enough, it's going to taste good. And I haven't had a bad hog yet.
Yeah, I haven't either.
How's the hunt go? Where'd you guys go?
So we were down in this most recent one. We were down in North Carolina. Was it Calabash?
Yeah. It's pretty much right on North Carolina, South Carolina border, right between Wilmington and Myrtle Beach.
Okay.
Yeah. So like I said, a guy that worked with me in the Marine Corps, Ryan, Paris, he runs Hunting Carolinas. He had an outfit down there for a couple of years, and he took a little break, and then just recently he got back started up again. You know, I've hunted with him for years, and so we went down there and hunted with him. But it's kind of funny. You're right, hogs. It's the best part is, you know, with hunting, you want to do it year round, and you can't. But hogs, you can. You know, so yep. I know for Devin and I think this is the second year we've kind of done a spring hog hunt. It's kind of a nice little. You know, it's something to kind of get your fix in between whitetail and turkey season. And then you got to find something to get you through the summer till whitetail starts back up in the fall. But I think, you know, last spring we went down to Texas and Devin hunted hogs for the first time. And up till then, I think he'd only hunted whitetail, and it was a good baptism by fire for him.
Yeah, you're right, Dan. You said it's just totally different. I mean, you're used to a deer, and you hear, you know, we can't, Indiana, we can't bait or anything. So you're not used to sitting over a feeder. So you're sitting down and, I don't know, a cut or a draw or whatever, or a ridge, and you're listening for that, you know, methodical rustling of the leaves as the deer comes through in between the 83 squirrels that have decided to drop acorns on your head all day. hogs are just totally different. It's like one second they're there, they're not there, and the next second they are. And you're trying to pick out of that 42 that are underneath the feeder, you know, which one's the one you want to drop. And they don't stop, man. They just don't stop. They constantly move. They're constantly twitching or bumping into each other. It's a totally different ball game. I love it. It's so much fun. It's definitely, I won't say it's better than deer hunting. I mean, that's what I grew up on. And it's what I love for sure. But man, yeah, it's a good time. I'm pretty hooked, I'll be honest with you.
They're just such a crazy animal to think that, you know, captive pigs got out and just became feral like almost overnight, and they reproduce so quickly. And I don't know statistics on like what animal is most likely to attack a person, like what wild game, but they've got to be up there.
Yeah, they're nasty.
They have no fear at all. Obviously, you know, if they sense danger, they're going to bolt. But like if you get them cornered, if you come across them at the wrong time, those things will come after you. And there's no, I mean, aside from shooting them, like even with a knife, you stand no chance against a 150 pound hog, much less a 350, 450 pound hog. All right, guys, if you've been listening to the podcast, I'm sure you've heard me talk about the helicopter hog hunt that I did down in Texas. Now, I went down there with Rogue Texan Outfitters, and Landon and Brandon, the owners, put us on the animals. We killed 150 pigs and 19 coyotes just from the air. On top of that, we went out thermal hunting at night and got up close and personal to more hogs. I didn't have to worry about bringing guns or ammunition because all of that was provided for me, and it is to this day the most action-packed day of hunting I've ever had. I stand by what I've said in the past, and that's that helicopter hog hunting is the funnest thing that you can do with pants on. In addition, they offer sandhill crane hunts and predator calling. So if you're looking for the most exciting hunt of your life and something that you're going to want to come back and do year after year, go check out RogueTexan.com and book your hunt today.
Oh, yeah. You know, and what's crazy is a lot of people don't realize they're actually incredibly intelligent animals. You know, so I grew up, you know, around farms, hogs, you know, grew up raising hogs, and they're incredibly smart animals. You know, they figure out how to escape the pen, all kinds of stuff. But, you know, wild hogs in particular, you know, you can tell hogs that have been hunted because they turn nocturnal, you know, and then you got to hunt them with thermal or night vision. And, you know, sometimes they get wily. I mean, you hear about, a sounder, you know, they'll send out the little ones first, you know, so, you know, they'll send out the little ones and the big ones will wait back in the tree line, be like, all right, it's been 10 minutes. I haven't heard a gunshot. And the big ones will come out, you know, and it's, but at the same time, it's also hard to know. So I know, you know, this trip we went on most recently, like I said, we went down to Eastern North Carolina, mainly hunting hogs, but it was also youth turkey season. So I had both my boys down there with me. One of them has not hunted before. The other one, you know, he's bagged his first buck and he had his first pig last summer, you know, so he was actually looking more for turkey. But the other one, you know, we took him out, you know, so we got down there, got in the blinds, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 o'clock. You know, we knew they were going to come out at dark, and it was kind of funny on the way down there. We were actually listening to one of your recent podcasts, and you were talking to a guest about, you take somebody out hunting for the first time, and like within like 15 minutes, all of a sudden some, you know, big monster buck comes walking out while I'm sitting there, you know, with my son Connor, and, you know, kind of, you know, teach him to be patient. I got him prepared to be a long sit, you know, hey, we could be here till late, you know, and we're just kind of sitting there, and all of a sudden I look up and it's still daylight. I think we had literally been in the stand for 15 minutes and there's a group of like 6 pigs on the feeder. And they're what we call, you know, so they're what we call Weber sized. So a Weber sized pig is about a 2 to 3 month old pig, not a piglet. They're old enough to get by on their own, but they're not quite a big, and they're just about the right size where you could skin them out whole and cook them whole on a Weber grill. That's why we call them Webers. So about 5 or 6 Webers. I'm like, hey, bud, hey, there's pigs on the feeder. You know, so he gets all fired up. You know, of course we've got a thermal rifle, but it's daylight, so he doesn't really need it. But you know, it was a great experience, you know, because he's, you know, they're not going anywhere. All of a sudden, you know, you can tell all of a sudden I'd hear him, you know, breathe. And I'm like, all right, breathe, you know, hey, all right, hey, put it back on safe, finger off the trigger, you know. And we probably watched him for 5 or 10 minutes, you know, and I'm making sure he knows, hey, wait for one to kind of step out. Don't shoot through a group, you know, wait till one steps out, wait till he turns broadside. You know, he finally gets one, you know, squeezes off a great shot, you know, 100 yards, you know, dumps it right there. 15 minutes into the hunt, we've got our first pig on the ground, you know, and it was, you know, from there, you know, Devin ended up having a great first night too, but, you know, long story short, we ended up, like, between me and my son, we ended up dropping 5 on the first night right there at that same feeder. He dropped one. A little while later, another group came in. I dropped another Weber and a sow, and he dropped a Weber. And then I was like, all right, we've dropped 4 is enough. Right. And we're sitting there and all of a sudden he's like, Dad, big pig, big pig. So I pick up the thermal binocular. It's dark by this point, and it's a big old boar. I mean, you can just tell it's a big old boar. And he's like, can I shoot it? And I'm like, man, we've already dumped 4 pigs tonight, but a big pig like that walks out, you're not going to tell him no. So I'm like, all right, dude. Yeah. You can drop the big boar. Again, same thing. I think we probably watched it for about 15 minutes because he was pretty wily. He was moving a lot. It was amongst the little ones. He finally waited for a great shot, squeezed off a great shot, you know, first night hunting hogs, he ends up dropping a trophy sized boar. I think it was, you know, for that area, maybe 180, but that's a good sized boar. So, you know, we end up finding it, drag it back. I'm like, hey, buddy, you know, thanks. That's going to be a nice taxidermy bill right there, but it's going to be a great wall hanger.
Dang. So,
Yeah, so he had a great first night.
That there's something about like thermal hunting also. I mean, there's so many things that you can do with pigs that you can't do with basically any other animal. Unless you go to Texas, then it's like the same thing for all non-natives. But those pigs with thermals or chasing them in a helicopter or, I mean, you know, most people who are shooting pigs have thermal setups. They've got suppressed rifles.
Yep.
And most hunters have never used either. You know,
when
you show up with an AR-15 or an AR-10 or whatever it is that they're using, you're like, oh, I'm hunting with this. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to rack one every time.
This is awesome.
And especially, have you guys done helicopter stuff yet? Helicopter hog hunt?
No, we haven't, but it's definitely on the list.
I'm telling you, I love shooting pigs. There is nothing as fun in the outdoors as helicopter hog hunting. Now, it's short-lived, you know, like you're not going to be up there for a whole week at a time. So there's definitely pros and cons to it. I love going out to elk camp. It's 9 days in the backcountry with my buddies. But as far as like packing as much fun into an hour as you can or into one day as you can, you can't beat it.
Yeah, it definitely looks like a good time, that's for sure.
So between the two of you, I mean, with your experience and with your kind of different journeys into hunting over the past couple decades, right, getting back into it, you know, Josh, are you bow hunting as well, or are you doing more rifle stuff?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. We're, you know, so Devin's the bow guy. So obviously me, so I think I had a bow and arrow when I was young, again, just literally out shooting stuff when I was a kid. But so I'm primarily a rifle hunter. However, probably within, I picked up a bow 2 or 3 years ago, you know, shooting a little bit, but I'd say probably within about the last year, I've really kind of have gotten kind of dedicated myself to it. Now I have not harvested anything with a bow yet, so I cannot call myself a bow hunter, but you know, I picked up a bow. I'm kind of in the process. I've actually got two bows now. You know, the second one, I kind of, you know, built myself, you know, restrung it, kind of going through the whole nine yards. So I'm actually kind of going through the paces. Now I will admit, Devin and I think we have this divergence all the time where I'm like, look, if I ever have a choice between a rifle and a bow, I'm picking the rifle every time, just because, you know, this is a game of odds that I'd rather, you know, I can shoot something out 200-300 yards, you know, versus, you know, waiting for him to get in 25-30 yards with a bow. But I do like it, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm waiting for the Wyoming elk draw here to come out. I think May 5th or so it's supposed to come out. But the goal is to hopefully get out and archery hunt elk, you know, this fall. And that actually that's going to be a pretty steep learning curve, you know, Wyoming archery elk for the first bow hunt. But you know, I'm looking forward to getting out there with a bow and doing something with it. So
talk about a game of odds. I mean, you picked one of the lowest odds out of everything, chasing after elk with a bow.
Yeah, but I guess if I could do that, then it'll be easy anywhere. You know, and I had a few opportunities this previous whitetail season. You know, I've got about 30 acres not too far from here. But I've actually, you know, the part I left out in the beginning is after I got out of the military, I hadn't had enough pain and suffering. So I thought it'd be a great idea to go to law school. So I've been a full-time law student for the last 2.5, almost 3 years. Now I finally graduated in May, thank God. And I blame Devin 100% for not talking to me. It was crazy crap before I even started. But, you know, I had fully intended to get out and archery hunt whitetail this year out of my property. But, yeah, I had zero time. You know, it's a lot easier to get out there. You know, when you can sit in a blind, it's a lot of work, you know, setting up land, setting up your blinds, doing your work and kind of figuring out, you know, where they're going to be. And unfortunately for me, the land's not great for whitetail. It's really wide open. And, you know, the deer don't like getting out there in the daylight anyway. So it was hard to pattern them. So I never really did. But, you know, going to try to change up a few things this next season and get out there as well.
Nice. Devin, is elk hunting something you've done, or are you sticking primarily with whitetail?
No, I would definitely love to elk hunt. That's definitely my goal. Western hunts for sure. Yeah, you know, my primary prey, I guess, whatever, has been whitetail, just because that's what's around here. You know, the big game. around Indiana. But yeah, definitely archery elk hunting is like, for me, the, you know, everybody's like, well, what's that one hunt you want to do? Like, what was, like, if you could do anything, no price or whatever, I'm like, archery elk, 100% archery elk hunt.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you don't want like a moose? Or, no, I don't want a moose. They're great. Trust me. I'd go hunt a moose any day. Don't get me wrong, but like, I don't know, something about elk, and I've never been, but just something about that's just always gotten me fired up. And that is the one thing. So, you know, we're doing the process of trying to bank points here and trying to bank points in this state and that state and play the odds and whatever else. So it's going to happen probably here pretty soon, but yeah, elk for sure is definitely on the list.
Now the progression seems to always go more primitive with weapons. Have you picked up a rifle for other things other than hogs, or are you just
I've taken a couple deer with a rifle. When I say a couple, it's maybe four or five, maybe. So not many. All my deer have all been bow. I always tend to get them that first or second week of November, which is still archery season here, right before the rut, that, you know, chase week or whatever you want to call it, seems to be when they like to hit the ground. But yeah, no rifle, for deer, that's about it. And then hogs. Nice. Well, then this fall. So the plan is, if he gets his Wyoming hunt, I'm going to meet him out there, and we're going to do, we're planning a DIY, probably, depending on how it goes, maybe some black bear. So that'll definitely be a rifle, for sure. Not quite up to bow hunting a bear yet. Something that can eat me just as easily as I can eat it is.
Yeah, but I mean, you're talking a black bear. The odds of a black bear coming after you are pretty slim, right?
Yeah.
I mean, every now and then people get killed by black bears, but I feel like it's very slim. I think your odds are more likely to run into a grizzly while you're elk hunting Wyoming than they are to get mauled by a black bear while hunting a black bear.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's actually what I was getting ready to say. I'm not really too worried about getting attacked by the black bear while I'm eating or while I'm hunting them, you know, except, you know, maybe if he's, you know, not a great shot with an arrow. But it's honestly the grizzlies out there, because especially out there in Western Montana and Idaho, you know, that's black bear and grizzly bear country. So,
yeah. I have this irrational fear of mountain lions. Never been around one. We don't have them here, but you know, anything that can jump on me out of a tree and then drag me back up the tree, I got a healthy respect for.
Dang. I didn't have a mountain lion encounter necessarily, but hiking around the mesas in New Mexico, I glassed up what I thought was a shed. My buddy glassed up what he thought was a shed. So I was like, dude, I've got just enough daylight. I'm going to bomb down the side of this mountain out into the valley. And I mean, it's not wide open, but like, there's enough open ground to where you can see where everything's been. It's like sandy soil. And I'm cruising and I look down and here's a cat track that's like,
No.
I mean, just a T plate, right? And I'm like, oh. So I hit him up on the radio. I said, hey, just a heads up, I got a cat track down here. We're like, bobcat? Yeah. I was like, no, mountain lion.
No.
And then
full-on murder mittens.
Oh yeah. We were I think it was day three. We were looking in dark timber for sheds, and you know, we're split up to where we can't see each other. Typically, if you yell, you can hear the other guy. And all of a sudden, my buddy Brian comes over the radio. He's like, Chris, is that you right behind me? And I get back on the radio, because Chris's radio, or like, we were hunting together kind of. And so I just had mine on. I was like, no, man, we're all the way at the back of this canyon. I think you're still out on the point. He's like, okay, well, I thought you guys were following me. Like, there is definitely something following me out here. So we kind of skirted around the canyon and tried to glass over there. And he said, whatever it was, he quit hearing it and it was gone. But I'm like, dude,
no thanks.
Very well could have been a mountain lion, man. You've got an irrational fear of mountain lions. I have an irrational desire to get attacked by a mountain lion, survive it with no life-threatening injuries, but just have an awesome scar and a cool story.
There you go.
Yeah, I could get that. You know, I've heard those stories, you know, whatever, you hear those ghost stories, you know, that there's that one, I forget where it was, what state, where like there was this mountain lion was like stalking this guy, but the guy was in his cabin. and it ended up like coming through the window of the cabin and attacking the guy. And I'm like, you know, if they're going to do that, I'm good. Like, I don't need to mess around with them.
Dude, the element of danger just adds to the adventure, you know?
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
It can take you out. And I've had some run-ins with grizzlies. I mean, nothing even close to like dangerous for me, I guess. It could have turned dangerous pretty quick, but like where I've hunted in grizzly country, it's the salmon run. So they couldn't care less about mammals at all. Yeah. They don't want big game. Yeah. It's just way too easy. That would be the nice part about like Wyoming, Montana. If you could elk hunt during the salmon spawning, then you would never hear about people getting attacked anymore. Aside from like randomly walking up, you know, they're not coming in on elk kills when they've got a whole river full of salmon and they can eat, you know, 30 in an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So if you get drawn, I mean, what have you been studying up on it, or who's taking out there?
Yeah. So again, you know, a little kind of spoiled, but so the elk trip is actually be a graduation present for my wife. So it'll be a guided hunt. I found linked up with a good outfitter out there. I think unit 59. So it's like just outside Yellowstone. Be one of your horseback in, you know, 7 days. So it's, you know, kind of like I'm lucky. I'm spoiled getting that dream hunt kind of up out of the way early. But I can tell you this much, you know, I think I've probably been, you know, about 5 solid years of hunting now. I think I've progressed pretty well, but I can tell you this much. If I wasn't hunting with an outfitter, I wouldn't be going after elk with the old stick and string. I can tell you that much. I'd be looking for, I'd be looking to stretch the legs with the rifle a little bit. Definitely going that route, but looking forward, you know, so there's that. And then obviously looking forward to the kind of the DIY hunt on the back end, you know, with Devin. So
I cannot wait to get out and chase elk with a bow. I mean, that's like, my buddy asked me the other day, what's your next hunt? Not like what's your next in order of time, but like what's your next big hunt that you want to do that you haven't done? And that's number one. Like, I want to hunt a moose with a bow. That's top of my bucket list. But realistically, my next is to chase elk. And before this show, I was actually sitting there watching YouTube, watching people just going after them with a bow and hearing them bugle, seeing their breath in the air. I mean, they're coming in ready to fight. Oh my gosh, man. I can't imagine that feeling.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty spectacular. I, like you, I've never elk hunted at all, let alone archery elk hunt. And yeah, I just, you know, that's one of the big things I'm looking forward to this year with that, is just getting out and seeing the scenery. But man, you're right. You know, seeing some 6x6 or larger, you know, a 300 plus inch elk coming in, stomping, bugling, whatever else. And I'd be shaking like a leaf. I know that for an absolute fact. I don't even know if I could draw my bow, let alone shoot one. But that's got to be just absolutely amazing.
I will say, I mean, you guys being from Indiana, bump that range up on your bow. Get used to shooting way out. I've talked to so many guys out there. And again, I haven't done it, just going on a mule deer hunt with a friend of mine last year with a bow. That was my first, like, even tag along hunt. And everyone's like, oh, you'll be lucky to get within 40. And I'm like, dude, most of us Midwestern guys, like, that's the bottom pin. Like, we aren't really sighted much farther than that. I gotta figure that out quick.
Yeah, most of mine have been, you know, I've shot a few maybe around the 30-yard range, but, man, these hardwoods around here, unless you're hunting a field or something like that, you're not hitting anything over 25 yards. It's just not happening. There's just, it just can't.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna have to stretch the legs on the old bow. Right now I'm shooting 30, you know, and pretty solid there. But I also live in a residential neighborhood, so you know I've not got a great place where I can really stretch it out to 40, 50 yards. So I'm gonna have to get out to the land and stretch it out. But quite honestly, going archery elk with, you know, that's pretty varsity move right out of the gate. But it's actually not our first attempt. Devin and I actually drew tags in Colorado last year. Or this past season, it would have been rifle, like rifle four. Right. But that was actually, Devin, that was a good lesson in, doing your homework before you enter the draw.
All right, guys, I'm excited to introduce the new age of accessing private property for hunting and fishing with Infinite Outdoors. I joined the Infinite Outdoors crew on a duck hunt in Colorado this fall, and the experience was unmatched. We were able to book the property right on their app, get directions to the blind, and had the whole place to ourselves, all for a super reasonable price. Infinite Outdoors has developed a unique way to combine conservation, technology, and private land access all through their US-built app and website. By working closely with landowners and on-staff biologists, they aim to bring you the best parts of accessing private land at the touch of a finger. They provide adventures for big game, turkeys, waterfowl, fly fishing, upland birds, small game, predators, and more. As yearly leases get more expensive and secluded public land gets harder to find, I believe this is the way of the future. To check it out for yourself, download the Infinite Outdoors app or visit infiniteoutdoorsusa.com and use code NOMADIC15 for 15% off your annual membership of $39.99. It's pretty crazy the difference between rifle and archery, not just like the range that you're shooting at, but the strategy and going after them. Because, you know, I've got buddies that archery elk hunt all the time, and the goal is to get on the same hillside as them or call them over to your hillside. Whereas with rifle, my buddy Sean, who got me into it, he's like, dude, don't ever be on the same hillside as the elk. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why? You know, you like cut that distance down. He's like, you can't see him. The country that we're hunting in, you just can't see them. Like if you're anywhere on the same plane as them, the scrub oak is too tall. You're never going to have a shot at the vitals. And so, I mean, all my shots on elk have been 300 plus. To close that distance into under, I mean, I was shaking at 300 plus. You know, when I see elk on a hillside a mile and a half away, I'm shaking. I can't imagine, you know, those bulls that come in bugling and you draw back at 25 yards.
Oh yeah, you hear, you know, like, I don't know if you've listened to stories like guys like Remy Warren or whatever. He's like, oh yes, I stalked into 12 yards to this world-class elk. How does that happen? I don't even understand it.
Yeah, and we think like the a buck's chasing a couple does around, you know, that's a couple extra sets of eyes. Well, you're talking, you might have 75 elk in there,
right?
And all the those eyes. Oh, yeah. Dude, you don't even have to worry about spooking the bull. You got to make sure you don't spook the cows before he shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a different ball game for sure. That's definitely going to have to do a lot of research on that one.
Yeah, that's why he's Remy Warren, though, right?
Right.
we're always, Devin and I are always, you know, of course, like I'm sure with all your hunting buddies, you're always sending memes and Instagram posts and stuff back and forth. And, you know, of course, I think Remy went through that thing recently where he had like wrist surgery. So he's using the mouth tab for his bow, still just drilling stuff at like 40, you know. So we're sending these things back and forth and Devin will send me one. And I'm like, you know what? That's awesome. But F this guy, you know, yeah, I'm over here, like, you know, hoping I could, you know, hit my 3D, you know, whitetail target in the vitals. And this guy's out here shooting 50 yards with a mouth tab, just dropping stuff. And I'm like, you know,
I swear guys are either getting dumber or just way better at everything. Because with Remy, it's like, okay, you film your own hunts. That's tough. I mean, filming a hunt is tough, much less when you're the one who has to shoot. Then you're thinking, okay, well, now you're doing it on public land. Okay, there's strike number two. Yeah. Now you're shooting with a bow, strike number three. Oh, that's not challenging. I mean, he's not doing it to make it more challenging, but yeah, shooting a mouth tab. I'm like, how? How is it possible? The success rate's like 3%. Most places it's less than that with archery equipment to shoot a bull. And he's going out there and doing it with all of these other factors added in. Can you imagine just putting a rifle in his hand and sending him out to one of those Western states? Like, he'd come back with a world record every other year.
Yeah. I mean, he's dropping what? Like, he got what? Like, a caribou and fallow deer and red stag and all with a mouth tab. And he's, whatever. I don't have that kind of time.
It's also a prime example of why the guy's making a living at hunting, too, though. So I think that's a difference, you know. guys like us, or at least guys like me and Devin, you know, we got day jobs to pay for our hunting hobbies. And, you know, I think that's the difference between doing it for a living and doing it as a very expensive hobby.
Yeah, he's crazy. Why don't we jump into talking about reasons? Tell me a little bit about that. How did that come about? I mean, was that kind of a brainstorm between the two of you? Did one of you come up with it? How did this all happen?
Well, it really started out just kind of a joke. You know, we were talking about, you know, sending those memes back and forth to each other, you know, so it would start out, you know, Josh would send me something to be like, I don't know, he's got like some guy's got like a flamethrower mounted to the front of his truck. And he'd be like, oh, I need one. What are you going to do with that? I don't know. I need it for reasons. Like, you don't need it. There's no reason why you need it. So it kind of started like that. You know, we were just talking about it, whatever, you know. It really started out, like I said, as a joke. And it was kind of like, then we started a conversation of, you know, well like, you know, cause we talked about, you know, maybe doing other ventures, like a nonprofit type thing to benefit veterans in hunting specifically. And that may one day still be the goal, but right now we're doing this and having fun with it, and why not, you know? And so, you know, then it kind of branched off, and it, you know, well, you know, why do we hunt? You know, well, reasons, you know, the reasons why we hunt. And it just kind of stuck, and we went with it. So that's really kind of how it started.
Yeah. So, you know, just like what Devin said, you know, it started out as a joke. And then, you know, as we kind of talked about, you know, getting, you know, doing whatever I guess we're doing now, we decided, you know, that even though it's like reasons, you know, we don't, you know, reasons is the only excuse you need, right? But more than that, like, everybody has a reason why they hunt. And I think if you want to connect with people, and if you want to kind of share with hunting, I think, you know, I think there's a lot of commonality between the reasons why we hunt. I mean, you know, just the three of us here found a lot of commonality, you know, the camaraderie and kind of the challenge, but like, everybody has their own reasons. And I think, you know, so, you know, the goal was really to just kind of make that a platform for kind of talking and sharing about it, you know? So, you know, we're a couple of Gen X guys, you know, we're not necessarily the greatest with social media, but we're kind of blindly feeling our way through this thing. But, you know, the big thing that we know that we can all connect with all hunters is kind of talking about the reason why we do it, you know? So there's obviously a lighter side to it. So we do talk about, you know, you know, hey, you know, why do we need this brand new gun? Because reasons are, you know, why do we hunt all the time? But really it's, you know, talking about and sharing with people the reasons why we do it. And it's everything from the lighthearted, you know, like, you know, to maintain my sanity, to the, you know, kind of talking about the other kind of more things with a little more gravity, you know. So, you know, we touched on the veterans piece, you know, that's a big thing, a flavor we try to add with everything, or at least touch on, you know, because it is, it's a big reason why a lot of, especially veterans hunt, because it's that connection to each other. It's that connection with our primal nature. And it's just a great way to maintain a sense of purpose in our life after you left a group where, you know, you had a sense of purpose every day.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I love hearing when guys come up with an idea, and even if it is just a joke to start, you know, turning that into something, whether it's making apparel or getting guys out there to experience the same thing that you guys have. Because hunting, although like it's deep rooted in us, a lot of people are losing touch with it. You know, they have no idea where their food comes from. Mm-hmm. They have no concept of death, you know, like a loved one dies and it's just, what do I do with this? Like, I've never been around anything dead in my life. And for my kids, it's funny because they talk about death like it's, oh, well, you know, they've watched me butcher pigs before. We've killed chickens, you know, piglets die. They get rolled over by their mom, and the kids are just like, oh, okay. And now my kids are like, Dad, are you going to make that thing dead? And I'm like, well, maybe when season gets here. But it's like getting people reconnected with that and kind of understanding more about nature, more about where we came from, more familiar with these things. No matter how you go about it, no matter how the company or the business started, like, it's always fun to get people out there and help them experience it.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, and that's, you know, we, like we were talking about reasons, you know, and we talked about, you know, you're putting food on the table and, you know, good. That's a good reason why I do it. Don't get me wrong. You know, if a 180 inch whitetail walks along, it'd be my day. I've never shot a deer like that, to be honest with you. I've never seen a deer like that in the woods, let alone gotten a chance to shoot at one. But, you know, I love it. You know, part of the reasons why I do is, you know, I feed my kids. What's all my kids eat? They're like, oh, you know, they asked for deer steaks. I had an incident, freezer incident. My youngest son decided he needed a popsicle and left the freezer door open too long. And so like part of the meat thaws out, which is just like, whoa. You know, it's awful, right? Like I can see like the look on your face right now is just horrifying.
It's gut wrenching, right? Man.
So I lost, I had like four back straps from a couple of deer thawed out. And it's like, now I got to cook them, right? And so I gave two to my sister and her family. My sister's got like four kids. And so she's constantly running to the grocery store. So I gave her, you know, a couple back straps. I cooked a couple. And like, I walk in the kitchen and my oldest son's just literally standing over the stove, just cutting slices of back strap off and just eating them as they're cooling off. You know, that's what they ask for. They want steaks. They ask for deer steaks or deer meat or whatever else, or hog. Now they ask for hog. They've grown an affinity for pulled pork and whatever meatballs. They call them Dad's famous meatballs. I usually do venison and ground pork, mix that together and make meatball in it. They're pretty fantastic, I'm not gonna lie. You know, so there's that. And you know, my girlfriend, she came over, one of the first times she came over, and we were gonna have dinner, and I was like, well, just go out to the freezer and grab a little white package, you know, it's ground meat, it'd be fine, right? And for her, it kind of, it really sunk in. And I remember the comment, you know, is talking about food insecurity, like during the pandemic, you know, you couldn't find your lockdown. You go to the grocery store and you couldn't buy meat.
Yep.
And it was like, I didn't care. Went out to the garage and opened the freezer and bam, we're having backstrap for dinner, right? Or steaks, or I don't know, tacos, who knows, whatever. And she's like, is it always like that? And I'm like, yeah.
If I do my job right.
Right. Yeah. If the season works out the way it should, I drop a few deer and whatever else. Yeah. We're putting up a couple, you know, 100, 150 pounds of meat every year and deer meat and, or venison. And yeah, it's always like that. So, you know, that's another big, you know, big thing for me is one of the reasons why I do is, you know, it's not only a passion, a lifestyle really, but it's, you know, it's a way of life of putting food on the table, feed my family.
Yeah, it's weird growing up in a hunting family and then thinking about people who haven't, because like what person aside from a hunter has 100 pounds of meat, like a year's supply of meat? They bought an extra freezer just for it. Nobody does. And I didn't really think about that with the pandemic. When the pandemic hit, I lived my life exactly the same as I always do. You know, like I had a couple buddies that were, they were staying inside. I was like, you need anything from Walmart? Like, I'm heading there right now. They're like, dude, you're going out? I'm like, yeah, I'm going out. And so I would like be the grocery delivery guy dropping it off at their door. But I never thought about the meat side of it, because I don't buy meat. Like if I go to the meat section or the deli section, it's to get my kids maybe some sliced turkey for a snack. Like they'll eat turkey crackers and cheese, right? Mm-hmm. Or I'll make turkey sandwiches for them after school. But other than that, like we don't buy meat. I don't remember the last time I went and bought a steak or bought hamburger or bought any. Yeah. Well, I do, unfortunately, because I also had a freezer incident. It was like 2 years ago.
And yeah, that's rough. It's your worst nightmare come true.
I still when I talk about it, I get sick to my stomach just thinking back to all the meat that I had to pull out of that thing. Yeah. There's not much worse like that, and wounding an animal and not being able to recover it.
It's basically the same thing.
It really is the same thing.
Yeah, it's awful. Yeah, that is one of the yeah, it's a horrible feeling. You know, I've been fortunate enough that, you know, eventually you hunt long enough, it's gonna happen. Like you're gonna shoot a deer, you're gonna shoot whatever. I've only ever had that happen one time where, you know, it was actually 2 seasons ago. I had a mechanical failure on my bow. I hit the deer with the arrow, but with the mechanical failure, it didn't, you know, it hit super high and just basically I shot the back straps basically is what happened. And, you know, you watch the deer run off, you know, it's not going to die. Well, more than likely it's not going to die. It'll heal up and move on, man. You talk about an animal that's got a desire to live. There's nothing else really much comes on a whitetail when it comes to the desire to live.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a sick feeling when you see that happen. And it's the same when that, you know, your freezer incident or mine, you're just like, oh my God, that's just, it's the worst thing ever.
Yeah. It really is. What do you guys have coming up next? Are you guys in turkey season?
Yeah. Almost. So it's turkey season here. And I'm actually in North Carolina now. I've been in North Carolina for quite a few years, grew up in Indiana, but I've been in North Carolina for a long time. So it was youth turkey 2 weeks ago. I think we're now into our second week of turkey here. So, turkey is what we got lined up. Like I said, it's first year really hunting turkey hard, you know, really going for it. So I'm planning on getting out this weekend with my son again. So I have here in North Carolina, I have a love hate relationship with public land, in that I love to hate it, but you know, when it's what you got, I've got turkeys out on the land, but really all I've seen out there is a couple of hens poking around, no toms running around. So, I'm going to hit up some public land this weekend with my son. And then, you know, maybe try to get out one more weekend after that, or maybe during the week next week, if I can get away, you know, see if we can put a turkey in the freezer, you know, that'd be a great little Thanksgiving feast, you know, turkey harvested. But, and then I know in a couple weeks it starts up in Indiana, and I'm going to head up and hunt, with Devin up in Indiana, go after turkey up there.
Nice.
Yeah. We'll start in, what is it, the last week, 26th of April, I think, is when season comes in here. And it's short. We've only got like a 3 week season. That's it. It's pretty short, and it ends, I want to say Mother's Day. Yeah. I've gone turkey hunting on Mother's Day more than once. So,
hey, that's all right. I miss my wife's birthday every year for elk season. So it's
all right.
It's necessary sacrifice, right?
Yeah. But you know, if you don't have that, you know, if you don't have that kind of relationship with your wife, are you even a hunter, you know, where like, you know, you hunt, she hates it, but you know, I know Devin's got it with his girlfriend. I've got it with my wife, you know, it's like, you know, of course they're not big fans when we're gone all the time. So you always got to try to even things out with a nice trip. You know, Devin and I were talking, we were going to take our significant others to Hawaii, you know, for like a week, you know, but then, you know, we're going to make sure we like, you know, get away for 3 days and go after, you know, the feral goats or the feral pigs or maybe the axis or something there, you know, it's kind of, you know, so, you know, 4 days and, you know, you put in our good boy points and then, you know, we get to go hunt feral goats.
I've had conversations with probably 8 guys in the past year about this exact thing. And I'm beginning to think there's a market for it. And we just need to start a business where it's like, you have your getaway. It's like a couple's retreat, you know, you get 4 friends together. And then, you know, my wife would plan something for the women. I would plan something for the guys.
Yep.
Everybody likes going to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Guys, if I'm on the beach, like I can only lay on the beach so long. Like I just don't really care. I'm like, I don't care how tan I am. My wife probably does. She hates a farmer's tan, but I'm like, I really don't care at the end of the day. She could sit out there for 25 days straight and be content as can be. For me, I'm like, I need to be throwing a football, throwing a frisbee, boogie boarding. I got to be doing something else. And if I can go out and hunt while she's hanging at the beach, we're both real happy.
See, what we got to do is we got, you know, build a hunting lodge with like a spa for the ladies.
There you go.
And a shuttle, you know, to like the mall or whatever, you know, extremely stereotypical, of course, but I mean, let's be honest.
Well, I think
brilliant business idea.
Yeah. I think even better would be like 2 separate lodges. You got the ladies lodge, the guys lodge, and then like every third night we all get together and hang out.
There you go.
And that way they're happy, we're happy, because the other part is like nobody wants girls in camp, right? I mean, not to be sexist, but like at a guy, like you're hanging out with 5 dudes and you go on a hunt somewhere, whether it's whitetail, turkey, hog, and one of them's like, hey, can I bring my wife? What's everybody's answer? Like, dude, you know, that's not really this trip. Like, we're all hanging out. And getting back to the dark humor, like,
my wife
made the mistake of looking at my phone during my guys' night group text, and she'll never pick it up on a Thursday again.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we have a rule, you know. Josh said he took his boys and we went hunting this last time. And there's a rule, you know, there's certain things that are said when you're in the hunting camp or you're in the hunt party that, you know, certain things fly then, and there's conversations, you know, we have that most people don't want to be a part of.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I actually had to have a conversation on the tail end, just make sure that you're like, hey, boys, you know, you are now in the man circle of trust. There are certain things that went on that we just do not talk about when we leave here. We can talk about it here. But, that's kind of part of it, you know, bringing him into the circle.
And that's a good age, too. We had a guy bring his son, and I don't know how old this kid was, maybe 7 or 8. To elk camp last year, and he might even listen to this. He's gonna get a kick out of it because his son came and the dad was like, dude, listen, anything goes at elk camp. Like, you're here, mom's not here, like, say whatever you want. And this kid had the worst mouth out of any of us by the end of the week. I mean, he's just cussing for the fun of it. It doesn't even make sense. He's just throwing words out there. Like, you'll ask him something and he just turns and flips you off. I'm like, listen, you punk kid, I'll still slap the crap out of you. Like, and his dad's like, hey, just so you know, if you say something to the wrong person, you might get, you know, something thrown back at you. But I was like, I think at 15, they could handle it. Yeah. If I took my 6-year-old son, you know, he's not going to be able to turn that off when he gets back to school. No way.
Yeah, it's taken me a few years. You know, obviously, you know, my kids, if being 15, they've been in the teenage years for a few years. So it's been a little, you know, a little up and down. You know, they had bad mouths. We've got been kind of hard on it. Now they're okay. They kind of know, but kind of going into it, I was like, all right, you know, when we're hunting, you know, it's cool. I was like, you know, I was like, no, don't abuse it. Like, don't, you know, for the heck of it, you know. But and it was I was sitting in the blind with my other son, the one who had already got a hog and a deer before. And he was sitting there and he was really wanting a big hog because his brother had already gotten a big hog. But we're sitting there. We'd been sitting there for a while. And in comes a group. I think it's like 4. We'll call them Weber plus size. They're a little bit bigger than the usual Webers. And I'm like, hey, bud, there's some hogs on the feeder. I was like, totally up to you. You know, you never know if another group's going to come out. You know, if you want to go ahead and take one, take one. So, you know, so he, you know, picks up the rifle, he's sighting through. I think he probably thinks about it for a minute or whatever, you know, and then he just says, you know what, fuck it, I'm just going to shoot this one, you know. And I'm just like, all right, yep, you got it, buddy. Yeah. It's all you, go for it, man. You know, and that was absolutely probably what I would have thought. And it's probably a good thing you did, because, you know, we ended up sitting there another couple hours, didn't see anything else come in, but, you know, yeah, I was like, yep. Absolutely good. And then, but on the way home, there's a reminder. All right, guys, because I think I caught one of them dropping an F-bomb on the way home in the car. I was like, all right, just so you know, hunting trips over, start to transition back into the real world. Let's watch that.
Man, that's funny. And I love Weber. I'm going to have to start using that one when I'm pig hunting. I just need a write-in section where people can write in and like respond to episodes. Because I would love to get a full list of the different size descriptions for pigs. Because when we're helicopter hog hunting, it's all sports, right?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, here we got a couple softballs. Oh, hey, there's a football. Obviously, it's relatable to 95% of men. But, throwing that out there, the Webers.
And for the record, we can't take credit for that one. I don't even know. I know it was Ryan, but I think it might. I don't even know if Ryan can take credit for that one. I think there was another guy that Ryan was telling me about that would come hunt with him quite a bit. He's like, hey, he loves to shoot the Webers. Every time he comes out here, he's like, he doesn't want the big ones. He's just going to shoot a Weber and take it home and grill it up whole. I was like, all right, man.
It works really well, though. I can tell you that.
Yeah, dude, those things are tasty, man.
Yeah, they are.
Holy cow. I mean, you don't get the big layer of fat, which that's one of my favorite parts. When you're cutting up a pig and you just have that, like, inch and a half of fat on it that you can...
Oh, you're talking about the shield?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not even.
Oh, talking no, you're not about that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, actual body fat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The body fat. I mean, farm pigs get it. Some places, the actual like wild boars don't get it. But when we hunted down in Georgia this year, that's one thing you guys should look out for is Cumberland
Island. Cumberland Island? Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. That's on our list.
Yeah, oh, July 1. For July 1 to hit that draw.
Hey, maybe we'll just see you down there. Those pigs down there, I started cutting into them. I'm like, dude, what's up with the fat? And they're like, all of them are like that. And I was like, they all have a good layer of fat. And they're like, they do. I mean, all they do is eat acorns all the time.
Okay, yeah.
And so I was like, shoot, man, I've never seen, out of all the pigs that I've killed in the wild, I've never seen wild pigs have fat like those ones do.
Yeah, I know the ones we got, they're pretty lean. You know, they move around a lot. They're eating pretty lean diets. But, you know, we talk about the shield. You know, what's crazy is trying to explain to people about the shield, especially on the boars, but sometimes even the sows will have them. You know, people, they can't necessarily wrap their heads around this concept of hogs and a shield. And then, you know, when you start trying to explain to people why hog hunting's tough, why shot placement is so key, and how some of them can, like, literally some of them will eat a bullet, you know, they'll go and throw themselves down in the mud, pack some mud into it and keep on going. And, you know, sometimes you just got to show them, you know, you're dealing with a boar, it's got like an inch and a half of cartilage, you know, surrounding his shoulders. And it's sometimes, you know, people tend to be pretty surprised when they see that.
Hey, I watched a guy. So one thing is I've gone on a couple hunts with like different vets or vet organizations. I'm not a vet, but I've been, you know, just invited by those guys. So I go down to Hunts for Heroes with these guys from Texas, or go down to Texas with these guys from Hunts for Heroes. And I'm standing across a slough and I'm watching this guy. And he was just another buddy that came with. And he's literally running backwards from this pig, just dumping 10 mil rounds into it. I mean, he empties his full, he had a full size Glock 10 mil. Empties his whole clip and then just turns and starts running from it. Meanwhile, the other guys are circling, trying to get a clean shot on it, and they end up killing it. I bet you that pig had 13, 14 bullets in it by the time it died. And I'm like, dude, this is crazy. I mean, not only that, it just got shot. Most animals would run from pain. Mm-hmm. This thing's like, all right, now it's my turn, you know? And yeah, hog hunting, you got to go with the right guys, but also some of those guys are crazy going in with knives or spears trying to kill them.
Have you ever hunted with dogs?
I've not pig hunted with dogs, but that's on the list also.
Yeah, that's on our list as well. It's kind of funny. It's you know, we follow a couple pages where, you know, they're guys that they're, and it, you know, it's like there's like a pecking order in hunters, right? Like, and I think amongst hog hunters, the guys that run dogs, they definitely feel like they're a step above. And I, you know, and part of me gets it, you know, and honestly, I don't blame them. I'm honestly jealous. I'm like, hey, invite me, you know, invite us. We'll go.
They're the catfish noodlers of the hunting.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Okay. Yeah.
That's a good analogy.
That's a great analogy. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I really appreciate you guys hopping on, and I feel like we definitely need to do a hunt together sometime, whether it's Cumberland Island or somewhere else, man. We should absolutely get together and do one.
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
That'd be awesome.
Before we hop off, where can people find you? Where can they find Reasons Outdoors and see what you guys have coming up?
Yeah, so we've got mostly on Instagram. Mostly it's Reasons_hunting. You can look us up there. We got a link to our store. We got some t-shirts and stuff like that that we've put together. They're mostly just kind of bad jokes that we've come up with and put on t-shirts is really what they are. But they work and they're funny and people seem to like them so far. That's the big place. Try to do most, it's all hunting related for the most part. Occasionally something else sneaks in because it's life, right? You know?
Yep.
Some pictures of hunts. We got some pictures from our most recent hog hunt up there. We're both doing some testing with some different arrows, different veins and stuff for arrows. So there's some stuff like that on there right now. So that's the best way. Right now we've got I think we've got like one Facebook post or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know. We've got really a Facebook. A platform. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys don't seem like much for being TikTokers.
No. So you know what? We actually tried TikTok and then we had two posts taken down in 24 hours. And honestly, they weren't even really that bad. And after that, I was like, you know what? Okay, I'm done with this.
They never are. You like tame it back and they still get banned. I know. It's ridiculous.
You know, and I was skeptical on TikTok to start with, you know, and like I said, we're a couple of Gen X guys. So it's like almost sacrilege to even get on TikTok. And I felt like we really put ourselves out there just by doing it. And we put, you know, like some pretty, you know, probably not G-rated, but it was, you know, not bad at all. And yeah, they got two of them got taken down in 24 hours. And I was like, you know what? Nah, we're done. Yeah. The TikTok experiment is over. So
that's funny. Well, guys, I really do appreciate it. And it's been a pleasure. So Devin, Josh, thanks for hopping on.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
And that is going to wrap it up for today's episode. Now, if you haven't already, go hop on YouTube, search The Nomadic Outdoorsman, and check out the newest episode on YouTube. It is the first full-length episode. I mean, it's like 20-something minutes of just shed hunting chaos and awesomeness. There is a lot of great content in there. And if you guys are into shed hunting, even if you're not, you should go check this out. Because up until this point, I could not say that I was a shed hunter. I was a shed looker. I tried to find them. I just really, really sucked at it. But the episode is up live now. Go check it out. Thanks for listening.